Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to begin by looking at a very inexpensive antimicrobial, antifungal, candida-killing extract. And then if you want to survive colon cancer, I'll give you the latest information on that. And what about alkaline foods and supplements? They build something in the body you need. Also, red wine could fend off prostate cancer. And a folk remedy may heal bed sores. So we have a lot on health and healing. We're going heavy today on our environmental segments. The soaring meat consumption is a bigger problem than thought, a new study from Common Dreams. Then glyphosate, the herbicide, causes antibiotic-resistant bacteria and kidney disease and infertility. John Thomas and Brian Shivhavy and Dr. Don Huber from Health Impact News. Also, one of the problems when you have the ocean of the world that becomes overheated and becomes acidic is you have imbalances in the fish population. Today, it's causing an explosion of jellyfish. Not a good thing, because they're also clogging up our nuclear power plants, water cooling systems. From a Pilita Clark, we have from the Financial Times an inside look of the drought that is draining critical U.S. water supply. A huge volume of fresh water is simply no longer there in the southwest United States. Where did it go? We're talking about a huge amount. And so I'll go into that and show you why you're looking at 40 million Americans who in the very near future, very near, are going to run out of water. If time permits, I'm going to share a commentary today on Apple engineered surveillance in a backdoor system into 600 million iPhones from Jonathan Benson from Natural News. What does that mean? It means that the National Security Agency developed a program to gain almost complete access to your iPhone. And that means that your iPhone, every time you use it, it's spilling all this data. Even the police would be able to download all that data on a routine stop and inspection. The path to a new 1914, How America Chose War After 9/11 by Jonathan Schell, Tom Dispatch. And if I don't get to it today, I'll get to it on my next program, The Witch Hunt. We had on Max Blumenthal from Alternet last week, and he just did a story about the fired MSNBC contributor speaking out on the suppression of the Israeli-Palestinian debate. She spoke out, and she got canned. But then in the feedback from real liberals was so great that they had to do something, so in a face-saving gesture, they invited on Chris Hayes' show. That ended up being a debacle. Shame on Chris. But then again, shame on everyone over to that corporate liberal Democrat-controlled station. We'll give you that. Let's begin. We have millions of Americans who have candida, a yeast infection. And they've tried pharmaceuticals, they've tried antibiotics, and all you get with all those drugs is you get sick. But you really don't do anything about the condition. Now there is good evidence that you can use grape seed extract. Now, I've recommended this for a long time, and it really is terrific. Usually about 10 drops diluted in a glass of 12 ounces of water. I would also put about 2 drops of colloidal silver in there, and that would also help. But it really does a job on candida. I would drink that about 3 times a day. Don't have any refined sugars, no processed grains, and no alcohol, because that feeds the candida, feeds yeast in your system. One of the problems of having candida is you frequently don't recognize that the bad breath is coming from the candida in your intestines. It's fermenting, and that smell, which is a terrible smell, comes right out and out. Because people say, well, I brush my teeth, I dental floss, I use a water pick, I scrape my tongue, I use a mouthwash, and yet 5 minutes later, my breath is not sweet, it's bad, it's sour. And that's frequently from candida. So because of our diet, we have an overabundance of food that feeds the candida. And when you have a high candida level, you're more susceptible to infections. Or when you get a viral infection or a cold, a bacterial infection or parasites, you're more susceptible to candida. So probiotics, fermented foods like kombucha, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A, twice a day, or sauerkraut juice or cabbage, raw cabbage juice, that's good. But the key to it, start with the drops of grapefruit seed extract. And it's just this oil that's inside of a grapefruit. If you notice you ever bitten into a grapefruit seed, and I'm sure you have, it's a little bitter. That bitter is able to kill off yeast and candida. A lot of people trust that the existing protocols for treating colorectal cancer, bowel cancer, are scientifically based. I have reviewed the evidence. They are not. Not with chemotherapy and radiation. They don't give you an advantage. They claim they do. They don't. Ask them to see the literature. More importantly, ask them to see, can you put me in touch with a patient who is 5 years past the treatment so I can see that it worked and they've sustained? When you get those patients, then you can speak to them and see that they had the same stage cancer you had, same type. Then you have some confidence that the therapy has benefit. But if they're not willing to do that, then I would question the protocol. But one thing does help increase bowel cancer survival odds. According to the University of Edinburgh, it is vitamin D. In fact, they found, quote, from the University of Edinburgh, bowel cancer patients with high levels of vitamin D in their blood are more likely to survive bowel cancer. The study is the first to correlate total blood levels of vitamin D in bowel cancer patients after their diagnosis. And they tested 1,600 patients after surgery for bowel cancer and came up with the results, and it was substantial. So that's the deal. If you want to live longer and you have bowel cancer, make sure you're getting your vitamin D. Back about 25 years ago, there was a whole media blitz on alcohol reduces heart disease. I was going around debating on those programs and debating the doctors that that wasn't true. And they were claiming it, you know, it was. And it was bad science. Just a little background. I had written a book on alcohol and what it does to your body and how bad it is. And I had read all the scientific literature that was available. And nowhere did I find that alcohol benefited the heart. To the contrary, I found that it actually weakened the heart muscle, leading to cardiomyopathy. It increases free radicals and cytokine, which are pro-inflammatory, which leads to destruction of your epithelium, the lining of your arteries. It kills brain cells, heart cells, liver cells, and kidney cells with each drink, upwards of a million or more. So the idea that alcohol was good was never true, but it was all based upon what was called the French paradox. And this was a gross oversimplification, but they found that people living in France that had a high-fat diet and saturated fat and a lot of dairy and meat, that these people should be suffering from a greater incidence of heart disease than what they actually did. And they found that because they drank with each meal, that that was the reason. Well, I went over there. I went to Bordeaux, I went to Lyons, I went all over France. And my research was just the opposite. I found, first off, that there was no difference in the cities and in the suburbs. But the incidence of heart disease in the country was substantially different. But I also found the majority of the people I spoke with, farmers, always had grapes on the table. They drank a low-alcohol wine that they made themselves more often than not, and or they shared from neighbors who made it and gave it to them. They didn't like using pesticides. They were extremely up-to-date on the dangers of chemicals on the soil. I remember once a farmer took me out to his fields. I guess he had about 20 acres. And he said, "This farm has been in my family for over 100 years. We know how to farm. We get the manures and we let them biodegrade down for a year. We then rebuild the soil up. We use compost. We have a place where all the local people who cut down trees and shred them bring the pulp here, and that's fibrous material that helps, and then we put that on our soil." He says, "We're not going to put a chemical that's on the soil when my well is shallow and it will get into the well water. We heard how about 60 million American farms and people, I should say Americans living on farms or in rural environments, about 25, 30 years ago, couldn't drink their water safely because their wells had been polluted by pesticides." He was correct, by the way, on that. I don't know the number, but he was correct that we had millions of Americans who were drinking unhealthy water because of pesticide runoff, DDT mainly. So he said, "Look at how beautiful this farm is. We know how to farm over here. We know how to eat. We don't sit down and eat one giant plate of food. And here we don't eat unhealthy foods. We eat healthy foods. Everything is antibiotic-free, chemical-free, etc." Anyhow, that was not an unusual or an exceptional discussion. As I spent 3 weeks there, and my entire day was spent speaking with farmers from early in the morning till in the evening, I got a good handle on this. Then I looked at their scientific literature, came back, and I found that it was because of their outdoors, they're working and hence exercising, they're eating lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains, they're not loading their body up with chemicals, and they have always finished a meal with grapes, at least in the area I was in. So that's what made the difference. But then when you went to the cities, you find out people are not always eating as healthy, and they're not eating the same amount of fruits and vegetables. So I came back and I gave my results. And I said, there is no French paradox. There is a regional paradox. And you could find the same thing in Italy, because I'd been to Italy and a friend of mine lived in France, and I visited him every year. And I saw how the people in his area lived. They lived the same way they did 1,200 years earlier. In fact, he had a house. It was a castle that was 1,200 years old. And the whole area around it had a very slow pace of living. So I got to see this firsthand. But then in Italy, I had people I knew who lived in the country, lived very naturally, and then sons and daughters who were professionals who lived in the cities, very stressed, smoked a lot of cigarettes, didn't eat the healthiest food, didn't exercise a lot. They, in their 40s, in 30s and 50s, were suffering from problems of high blood pressure and heart conditions. Their family, much older, living in the country, were far healthier. So when this whole idea that alcohol could help us was not the case, and it finally culminated when a man came to see me, an attorney, and he was overweight, and I'm looking at his inflammatory markers, and they're off the chart. And I said, what kind of protocol is this? And he said, "Well, this is what my doctor told me to take." He said, "Have two drinks a day." And I said, "And what kind of drinks do you drink?" And he said, "I drink scotch. So I have two glasses of scotch a day." And I said, "Well, first off, you realize you're getting double the amount of calories for alcohol than you are for carbohydrate or protein." No, he didn't know that. And that if you're going to have alcohol, then you have a non-sulfated, low-alcohol wine, an organic wine. That would be all right. He doesn't know that. Put him on a protocol without any alcohol, an organic, and within 4 months, he was fine. This is from the British Medical Journal. This is from the University of Pennsylvania. Quote, "No evidence alcohol benefits the heart. The study that even among people who drink only light to moderate amounts of alcohol, reducing consumption can improve heart health, reduce body mass index, there's your fat, and bring down blood pressure. The large multi-center international study, which was co-led by the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, calls into question previous research that suggests light to moderate drinking may be good for your heart. The researchers found that people with a particular gene consume 17% less alcohol per week were less likely to binge drink, but then it gets into the fact that the alcohol didn't help anybody. So they finally nailed it 25 years late. How many people had to die of heart disease, sclerosis of the liver, because of the alcohol? New research shows that alkaline foods and supplements build strong bones. And that's good. So eat more of your fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans. Those are the alkaline producing one. The acidic foods you don't want to eat, alcohol, meat, dairy, and sugar. And finally, good news for those of you that eat broccoli and non-GMO organic soy. Quote from Los Angeles, I believe this is Los Angeles Times, eating foods like broccoli and soy have been linked to lower cancer rates, and California researchers said on Sunday that they may have discovered the biological mechanism behind the protective effect. Using cells in a lab dish, researchers at University of California, Los Angeles found that DIM, a compound resulting from the digestion of cruciferous vegetables and genistein, an isoflavin, in soy, reduced the production of two proteins needed for breast and ovarian cancer to spread. Quote, "We think these compounds might slow or prevent the metastasis of breast and ovarian cancer, which would greatly increase the effectiveness of current treatments," end quote. Well, that's good news, but it's from Reuters. We've been telling you that for some time. Think of all the people in this audience that every day you have your cruciferous vegetables, and just more research on how good that is for you. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to share the insights that can allow people to live a longer and healthier life. We also take on environmental issues. I'm going to take some of those on right now. In fact, we present more information on the environment than any other radio program in the world. From Common Dreams, an article which we will repost on our site today, blog.garynoll.com or progressiveradionetwork.com, and my Facebook. It's on all those. Soaring meat consumption, bigger problem than thought, a study. Quote, "New research suggests that giving up red meat in particular could be more impactful on the environment than giving up your car. Eating meat is turning up the heat." That's the message from a team of international researchers whose just published study shows that the raising of livestock and consumption of meat, especially beef, is becoming an increasingly aggressive driver of planetary global warming and climate change. Published this week in the journal Climate Change and posted in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, quote, from Damian Carrington from The Guardian, "The heavy impact on the environment of meat production was known, but the research shows a new scale and scope of damage, particularly from beef. The popular red meat requires 28 times more land to produce than pork or chicken, 11 times more water, and results in 500% more climate warming emissions when compared to staples like potatoes, wheat, and rice. The impact of beef per calorie is even more extreme, requiring 160 times more land and producing 11 times more greenhouse gases. Agriculture is a significant driver of global warming and causes 15% of all emissions, half of which are from livestock. Furthermore, the huge amounts of grain and water needed to raise cattle is a concern to experts worried about feeding an extra 2 billion people. But previous calls for people to eat less meat in order to help the environment or preserve grain stocks have been highly controversial. End quote. So the takeaway message is simple. If individuals are able to give up the meat by going to grains, they can make a substantial difference in helping our environment and slowing down global warming. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to do more in a moment. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. Please stay with us. We're heard right now in 166 countries and land-based stations around the world. Nice to have you all with us. Party we had about 4 months ago. I'll be doing another dance party in about another 2 months. It's going to be a very active fall back in New York City. Look forward to being back in 3 weeks. And I'm going to talk about DNA, mostly junk, in a moment. I'm going to have an interesting guest. My guest is going to give us an insight into the corruption and failure of America's foster care and child welfare systems. And we also have commentary, still have more to do on the environment, and including the path to a new 1914. The 1914, of course, was the First World War. We're just going to take 2 minutes because I've changed our special. Here is our special. Let's make it really simple. And here's why this is so important. We all need protein. Because it's the building blocks, the amino acids, the building blocks of life. And it is the quality of the protein and how easy it is to be assimilated, the bioavailability of it, that is what we should be looking for. Now, if people actually ate the amount of protein they need, you would get one forkful of meat. And that would be it. That's all you'd need. The body can't store protein. So having 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 times that amount as if you would during a normal eating of a piece of meat, especially the way we supersize the sandwiches and the steaks and the barbecue ribs and everything else, we're just destroying our kidneys, in my opinion, and our livers and digestion and creative constipation. Meat-based protein is really not good. And besides, if you look at the length of our intestine, we don't have the intestine of a carnivore. We don't have the teeth of a carnivore. We don't have ripping and shredding teeth. Our jaw moves side to side, much like a cow chewing cud. We have enzymes for breaking down the complex carbohydrates. So what we really need is a high-quality, vegetable-based protein. And that's what I had this morning. That's what I have every morning. And when I travel, I put it in a bag. It's called Muscle Stuff. Vanilla Muscle Stuff. It is as good a protein as I could create. I use just a basic pea protein because that is the best that I know of. It has got all the complete amino acids. It is so easily assimilated. And I use lecithin. I use vanilla, natural vanilla. It is that simple. You're getting a high quality protein, and you're getting it in amount It comes in a 1.5-pound container. It's called Muscle Stuff, vanilla. And this way, you don't pollute the environment, as I was just showing by having meat raised for your protein. Because I grew up where everyone had to have bacon and eggs for breakfast or sausage and eggs for breakfast and a glass of milk. And then we had to have meat for lunch and meat for dinner. And that's because our parents, mainly our mothers, believed that what they were told. They didn't question authority, you know. And you were told that if you could, on at least maybe a Saturday or Sunday, give roast beef or like a big piece of meat to your family, you're doing the right thing. I can remember my father always had a 2-inch steak with big fat around it. They never associated the diseases with that. They should have. It would have made a difference. It would have saved their lives. It would have prevented his cancer. But that was then. Today, we're trying to prevent disease, have people live longer lives by making better choices. So you want to start your day as I do. I make a smoothie. In that smoothie, I put green stuff, red stuff, greens and grains, cruciferous stuff, berry blast. I put in some nut butter, a raw organic nut butter. I put in a teaspoon of coconut, raw organic coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and then I put one scoop of Muscle Stuff. Now, I've got some photographs that were taken last Sunday. I'm starting my training for some heavy-duty competition. If you want to see what I look like today, it's only a week later, you can go up on my website. In fact, I'm going to ask, I don't know who's in the office in New York today, but I'll ask them. They're there. If you scroll down, you'll see them. And they've been up there for about a week, and you see that's how I look today, ripped and cut. And I'm a vegan. I don't eat animal flesh or dairy. So if someone wants to argue that, gee whiz, you'll be weak, really? Elephants are not weak. And they're the longest lived, the large animals. No, they've got it wrong. Shortest lived are the carnivorous animals. Lions, tigers, cheetahs, panthers, leopards. They are short-lived. 8 to 12 years, unless they're in captivity. But humans, the studies are on our side. So this is the ideal vegan, plant-based, complete protein. Bodybuilders use it. Look at the cuts I've got. 190 pounds, small waist, strong. That's one of the things you need. You need muscle, and you need protein to create muscle. So that's the special. The special, it's already was reduced to $39.95. We've reduced it on down again to $25.99. You want to get it? It's on sale. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 and get your Muscle Stuff. Vanilla, 1.5 pounds, 680 grams. And it's the best I can do for you, all right? This is what I take every day. And I'm on the road, and I take it because I need it. I don't worry about stopping in restaurants. Don't have time, work I'm doing. It's on a super, super special for you, okay? Call 877-627-5065. When you travel, if you got room, take the whole container. If not, do what I do. I take a plastic bag, a little zip bag. I put it in there. And you can get these zip bags that last a long time and put it in so it protects it. And then you got your protein powder. Back to our program now. Continuing with our discussion on the environment, this is from Health Impact News from a trio of reporters, John Thomas, Brian Shilhavy, and Dr. Don Huber. The article they've written is called Glyphosate: Herbicide Causes Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria, Kidney Disease, and Infertility. This is serious stuff. This means the GMOs that we're eating, the genetically modified food that people are eating, this is getting in their system. Quote, Center for Disease Control and Prevention director, issued an alarming warning this week. Quote, antibiotic resistance that turns ordinary disease-causing bacteria into illnesses that can't be controlled could bring about the next pandemic, end quote. Whoa, that's some serious statement, because normally people in the most powerful positions at the CDC tend to make more conservative statements. The next pandemic, antibiotic resistance, meaning if you get sick, there's not any medicine, any antibiotic that would work against it. Now, it's generally acknowledged today that the age of antibiotics is over, as bacteria have adapted to resist the pharmaceutical products that have been created. Now, there was a time when these were miracle cures. They helped save lives. That is without doubt. The focus now is on the microbe biome, both the human microbiome as well as the other microbes systems within our environment. As we enter into a new age of dangerous organisms totally out of control, how do we get to this point where modern medicine can no longer stop infections? Many analyses correctly point to the fact that we have overused these man-made antibiotic drugs, both in medicine and in livestock raised in CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations. However, as we report to you, there is probably a far greater reason the human microorganisms have been damaged and many people destroyed, leading to a multitude of allergies and other diseases that plague this modern generation. That reason is linked to a common herbicide currently present in 80% of the U.S. food chain, glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup and other herbicides. Glyphosate may well be the most toxic chemical ever produced for commercial use, as it is now linked to kidney disease, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, inflammatory bowel disease, obesity, depression, ADHD, autism, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, ALS, multiple sclerosis, cancer, cachexia, infertility, and developmental malformations. It destroys the microorganisms of the human and plant, which is the root cause of our modern disease. The international recognized expert on Roundup toxicity is Dr. Don Huber. Recently spoke on the subject of preserving human health and the safety of our food supply. Roundup and other weed-killing chemicals that contain glyphosate are the most widely used toxic chemicals in the world today. Glyphosate residue from Roundup now contaminates more than 80% of the U.S. food supply, and this contamination is not harmless, but has been linked to over 32 modern diseases and health conditions. And then it goes into talking about it. So, one more reason why we should all be eating organic and making sure that we, every state in America that has a movement, grassroots movement, to cause the labeling and hence the banning of genetically modified foods should be doing that. Now, if you're not familiar with the topic, we have written multiple articles, including the definitive articles on how to respond to people who may have a little bit of science or using talking points from the pro big pharma and big agri industries about, oh, there's no problem with this. Yes, there are, and we document them. Plus, watch the multi-award-winning film, Seeds of Death. It's free. It's on our website. And educate yourself. Finally, we have two reports, one from L.J. Devon of Natural News, exploding jellyfish population, a warning sign of worsening ocean health. Quote, signs continue to emerge showing that the ocean waters are changing in pH, moving toward a more acidic state. As jellyfish populations explode in specific areas of the ocean, scientists warn of a new era of declining ocean health, teeming with imbalances of ecology. In fact, marine biologists are beginning to notice intense jellyfish populations expanding in areas never seen before. These invertebrates can compete with whales for food and threaten their survival. Even more dangerous, jellyfish populations pose an ongoing threat to nuclear power plants, threatening shutdowns. How so? Not only are growing jellyfish populations damaging fishing, but they are also posing a threat to nuclear power plants, threatening near meltdowns. In fact, a Swedish nuclear power plant was recently shut down when tons of jellyfish clog the cooling pipes that bring water in to the plant's turbines. The Swedish nuclear plant uses similar boiling water reactor technology as the Fukushima Daiichi plant in Japan. And this is being studied because everywhere in the world they're seeing this, and it's they're taking over a lot of the habitat, and they're displacing other aquatic food. For example, the Black Sea, quote, so jellyfish can wipe out a whole food chain by eating down at the bottom. And they're doing this, marine biologist said. And they looked at the Black Sea. It was just a few years ago that jellyfish overtook the Black Sea, competing with fish larger than themselves. Now the species of jellyfish makes up 95% of the biomass there. It's something to watch. That's what happens when we change the pH of the water, and we're doing that. It's getting warmer. And finally, from Pyelty Clark from the Financial Times, a short article on drought drains critical U.S. water supply. Quote, a huge volume of fresh water has disappeared from the drought-struck southwest of the United States in the past decade in what researchers say is a startling sign of the fragility of one of the country's most important water supplies. About 65 cubic kilometers of water has been lost since the late 2004 from the Colorado River Basin, an area roughly the size of France. It is a vital but heavily used source of water for more than 30 million people and 4 million acres of farmland. The amount lost was nearly double the volume of the Colorado River's Lake Mead, the largest man-made reservoir in the United States, according to a study by scientists using data from NASA satellites that can measure changes in water levels. Quote, this is a lot of water to lose. We thought that the picture could be pretty bad, but this was shocking, said the study's lead author, Dr. Stephanie Castle, a water resource specialist, University of California, Irvine. More than 75% of the loss was due to a rapid depletion of groundwater from underground aquifers that many farmers depend on for irrigation, especially during droughts like the one that has been affecting the Southwest for the last 14 years. The researchers found that the rate of decline of groundwater, much of which is non-renewable and poorly managed, was 600% greater than the losses in Lake Mead and Lake Powell, another large reservoir further upstream in the Colorado. Quote, groundwater is already being used to supplement the gap between surface water supplies, that means rain, and basin water demands. The water security of western United States may be at greater risk than is fully appreciated. Yep, well, I've been telling you this. You've heard me say for a long time, there's 21 states that are running out of water and 7 are acutely dry now. You're looking at 80% of Texas, 80% of California. You're looking at 100% of Nevada, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, those in Arizona. Those 8 states are in dire straits, and it's not coming back in the near future. We can expect these drought conditions to go on for a long time. So we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40 million people being adversely affected. And we're not talking about 10 years away. We're talking about right now. So just remember that if you intend to move in those areas. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you all with us today. We have our guest in a moment, but I'm told that we have one of our scholars in residence in the studio in New York, Jeremy. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary.
What's up? What do you have to share with us?
I just wanted to jump in because we were looking at the numbers this morning from the last 3 months, and regarding the popularity of Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, it turns out that we are in the top 0.1% of all websites worldwide. When we took a look, we saw this. It was pretty amazing, but it leaves little question as to the fact that we're the ones that people are engaged with, we're the ones people are listening to. So I just wanted to bring that figure to our audience today.
Is that 1% or 0.1%?
That's 0.1%.
So we're in the top 0.1%, which means that there's 99.9% behind us, right?
That's right.
Good. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I'm glad that you, and that's from a credible source, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Well, I've been seeing the figures. I get them, and they just keep going up and up and up and up. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about millions and millions and tens of millions of people. So, thank you. We are, you know, we're sharing information, and people are responding. And especially, I saw the latest analytics of the average listener is a college-educated, frequently a graduate school woman, age 34. That is the average listener. So mm-hmm. we're happy to be sharing insights and information with them that empower them. Thank you for sharing that information, Jeremy.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
And we're going to go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by. And we're going to talk about the corruption and failure of America's foster care and child welfare system. Joachim Hagopin, I realize I might not have pronounced your name correctly. H-A-G-O-P-I-A-N. Okay. You're on Skype.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I just need you to speak up a little louder, please, so I can hear you.
Okay. And, can you hear me now?
I can. Thank you. He has been practicing clinical psychology and marriage counseling in California for over 25 years. He has an emphasis on the disadvantaged youth in the child welfare system. And for years, he worked with child abuse victims and learning disabilities in diverse settings, including residential homes and outpatient clinics. And from a congressional appointment, he attended a U.S. military academy at West Point through a congressional appointment in the late 1960s. And he is here to talk about what goes on in those systems. And by the way, his articles can be found at globalresearch.com and his West Point book at redredsea.net. So first, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate you being on.
Thank you, Gary.
And I just want to begin by quoting a paragraph from your article in Global Research entitled "The Failures of America's Foster Care System." Quote, "My decades of firsthand mental health experience saw the destructive inside machinations of a corrupt, overloaded, thoroughly broken foster care system do more damage than good to children and families with whom I closely work. Like all institutions in America, the child welfare system is just another corrosive, morally bankrupt, oppressive mechanism by which to control the poorest people in this country, acting as a national conduit pipeline to prison, substance abuse, human trafficking, homelessness, mental illness, and even death." End quote. So I'd like to ask you to just begin by providing an overview of what you have observed and experienced as being the corrupt basis behind foster care and child welfare today. And I'd like to also have you address the steadily growing increase in cases being reported in alternative news media about legal kidnapping of children from their homes and families. The forum is yours.
Sure. Well, my own personal experience as a therapist for young kids and adolescents with the Children's Court system and the out in Los Angeles County, it's the Department of Children and Family Services, otherwise around the country known as Child Protective Services. My experience has been that these agencies that are designed to protect children do damage. And as an advocate and therapist of these children, I found that the system of the foster care with the Children's Court and Children's Services, that they do not operate in the best interest of the clients that I serve. And I found myself clashing with the system in advocacy of my clients. I saw families being broken up right and left that, I did not observe any abuse, and I had a grave concern for the well-being of my clients because simply the judge in the children's court, the social workers for children's services were clearly not operating in the best services of the children that they have sworn oaths to protect.
All right.
The system itself is, in my belief, a pipeline to the prison system, human trafficking, unfortunately, the statistics are pretty horrible of the kids that are aging out of the system. They get hooked on drugs. They're homeless. They end up in prison. It's just a bad scene all around, and it's the system that is unresponsive to their needs. And that, you know, I would go into the court and I would like be talking about a child in foster care being abused, or a child being placed with a mother and an older sister abusing my client, and it would fall on deaf ears. So it was a very frustrating experience when you are all about trying to help and heal your clientele, and then you have a system that seems to be bent on destroying them.
Could you please give us an insight into what happens in, just take a normal day, in the life of a child that's been taken from their parents and put into some form of foster care or child welfare system, so that we understand more of what they're actually experiencing?
Okay. Well, I'll give you examples of, my own clients. I had one client who was 5 years old at the time. She was almost six, but she's a very young girl at the age of 5 or 6. And she was asleep, and Child Protective Services, social workers that are investigating families come in with a couple of policemen, and they enter the home, and they start searching the home for any kind of sign that the parent is not doing an adequate job as a parent. And, in this case, they found some empty prescription bottles in the medicine cabinet. And they made an on-the-spot decision to remove the child. And so this child is jarred awake by policemen and screaming as they take her out of the home. And then she's placed in foster care. They sometimes have difficulty on the spot finding foster parents. There's a big shortage in America, so... Then the child ends up in a foster home around complete strangers. Generally, children find that they are a commodity to provide a check for the foster parents. I also see them oftentimes taken to residential facilities, especially if they have been in multiple placements. Usually the residential facility where they have a more structured program will be their receptacle. And they get bounced around over the years. Many of my clients have had, by the age of 14, they've seen 10, 12 placements. There's a lot of runaways. It's a really bad situation for these young people, and the results is that they don't fare well as adults.
I understand that there's also a lot of unspoken about and unresearched or investigated physical, verbal, and sexual abuse of these children, and we never hear really about that in the mainstream media.
Yes, in foster care placement, I have observed sexual abuse. There's the foster dad abuses the teenage girl. Obviously, if your motivation, first of all, I will also say that there are good foster parents, there are good children's court judges, there are good social workers in the system. So I don't want to blast everybody that's in this field as being the demon. However, there is a lot of abuse as well. And that's why, it's such hypocrisy for a system that is structured to protect to end up abusing and re-traumatizing young people where they have to wear the effects of the abuse for life. And so, yeah, it's a very, very difficult situation. I believe that there are, and I've run into a lot of clients who in their families of origin were abused as well. So, I mean, there is a need for some kind of protection of children from abuse, almost always adult abuse. But for a system that's designed to protect, we have to do that and not destroy and you know, traumatize.
Okay, a question I don't know a clear answer to is whether or not the child welfare system is becoming increasingly privatized, such as our educational and corrections facility and prison industries. According to one source quoted on Health Impact News, the CPS is now almost a $30 billion industry where we see privatization running social services and needs for profit enterprises. We see a rapid degradation of services, substandard conditions, and this is especially the case with our private prisons today, where abuse, torture, poor nutrition, rape, forced labor, and a lack of government oversight is rampant. It's epidemic. And this is also happening with foster homes and welfare facilities, or is it happening with them today? Are they being privatized? Is this part of the problem?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing in this country is the privatization of pretty much a lot of, I mean, there's the military-industrial complex and waging wars, high profit for those few. There's the prison complex, and it's a conduit. I mean, all these systems are interrelated in that they provide more money for private industry, and a private industry that is, ripe with abuse and ripe with corruption. They make these deals with the government, and there's a lot of, you know, money that is unaccounted for. There's a lot of, punishment and just abuse in this system that is largely unaccounted for. So that was one of the things that made me write the article, because I kind of been sitting on it. I've been out of the field for a couple of years and hadn't written about it, and I just felt like, you know, I need to get this out.
Okay.
We need to alert the people that there appears to be some kind of movement in this country to attack the family and take children away.
I may do a documentary on it. I was so moved by your article. I believe this is a gross social injustice impacting hundreds of thousands and potentially millions of children. And since almost all the children in our welfare and foster care systems are on a variety of pharmaceutical medications, and ADHD is being largely conveniently diagnosed as the disease that they have, and they're being given psychiatric diagnosis, then I'm seeing a relationship between big pharma and big medicine and foster care systems to maintain the status quo. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. It's all interrelated, and it's all for profit, privatized profit at the expense of the well-being of our people. That's what I see. It's a pipeline. I mean, the overdiagnosis of ADHD, any kid that basically, you know, has a little energy in the classroom that becomes a management problem, what do? They label them ADHD. They start giving them the Ritalin and other drugs. It's really a travesty of justice. It's not in the well-being of our children, we need to get together and try and stop it.
My last question, and I need a short answer because we're running out of time, is that one opinion is that becoming more common among those criticizing our private prison system is that our totalitarian hierarchy in Washington, in Wall Street, in the media, see a third-tier class system, the small wealthy elite, the educated drones who serve the elite, and then everyone else in prison or on the streets in poverty. The drones can easily be brainwashed into accepting the elite's Kool-Aid, and those who become the uncivilized non-humans in the streets and ghettos in their mind, in the ruling elite's minds, can be controlled by our militarized police state. Now, that may seem like an exaggeration, but I'm writing a major piece now on fascism and the militarization of our police and the shredding of our constitutional rights and liberties. Do you see a connection?
Yes, I do. I believe that the rights of the people, our liberties have been lost, the Constitution. All these people have sworn to uphold and protect the Constitution, and they're all in violation of it. Human rights violations is rampant in this country. We do live in a police state. It's a militarized police state. I've seen the military, they're buying the hardware of war in all the police departments. They're rounding people up. We have people on activists on lists. I also believe that, you know, at some point they'll declare on a false flag emergency, they'll declare martial law and start rounding people up. I think our liberties are seriously lost, and we need to fight back to try and regain our constitutional rights.
I agree with you. Thank you for doing all that you have, and first in counseling and helping people using holistic, humanistic, clinical psychology in counseling individuals and children. Standing up after 25 years in the largest foster care and welfare, child welfare system in the United States in California, and being the whistleblower that tells us the truth. It is for us now to take what you've shared with us in the article and take it forward. We'll post your article on our website, and it reaches a lot of people, and I will continue. We'll have another conversation on this.
All right. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. And my guest from California, Joachim Hagepin, and that's Hagopian. I'm Gary Nall. I'll look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.